You're listening to Cold OD Messianic Congregation's weekly podcast. Our services are every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. For more information, like us on Facebook or visit our website at coldod.org.
Let's start, look at the scroll of Esther quickly. I'm just going to point out a few things, really one thing that I want to focus on. It's going to be a short message. And so scroll of Esther, you know, if you could sum up the theme of the book of Esther, the scroll of Esther, the Megillah of Esther, I would call, you know, say, and this is not new to me, or, you know, original to me, but God's hidden hand, God's hidden hand. I love that. I mean, we see God working. His name is not mentioned in the book, by the way. It's conspicuously not mentioned. There's acronyms that can say we're, you know, they're alluding to God's name. But God's hand is working behind the scenes in so many ways. Such an amazing story. Now, Woody Allen said, and by the way, there's an interview with Billy Graham and Woody, on Woody Allen's show when he was younger, and I saw that too, a couple clips from it. Really, it was funny and actually informative, understanding how Jewish people understood the, you know, where he was coming from, full of conviction, and it was very cordial, very well done. And except then I just felt so sad afterwards because I thought he really, Woody Allen really seemed to be, you know, open. I mean, hearing it in a way and convicted, I think, in a way, in a good way. And, you know, I just wish he'd come to faith. Maybe he has by now. I don't know. But after later years, you know, he hadn't for a long time. But anyway, you might want to catch those. One is a 6-minute, one is 4-minute. That's all I could find. But anyway, he said, do you want to make God laugh? Tell him about your plans. And really, it's from an old Yiddish proverb that says, we plan and God laughs. We plan and God laughs. The book of this book also could have been called the Book of Mordecai. Do you know that? If you look at the end of the book, look at the end of the book just quickly, chapter 10, the last chapter, and you see in the end of the book, verses 2 and 3, all the acts of his power and might, along with the full account of the greatness of Mordecai and the story of how the king promoted him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings? And it says, for Mordecai the Jew was second only to King Ahasuerus, preeminent among the Jews and held in high esteem by the multitude of the people. So it could have been called, you would think, the Book of Mordecai. But it's really the book of Esther, called the book of Esther, because of the amazing story of what she did and how God used her. And Mordecai is introduced in 2:5, chapter 2, verse 5. Esther isn't introduced until 2, verse 7. And I'm going to pause for a announcement that I forgot to make, if I can find it. Here we go. No, it's not here. I know what I did. I put away a page. Well, I'll just mention this. Purim actually occurs. When does the holiday actually occur this year? It's Wednesday night. Wednesday evening is actually Purim. So you might want to gather in groups. I wish we had our own place. I would do it to read through the scroll of Megillah, the whole scroll. You know, just read through the book. 10 chapters doesn't take that long. And just that's the custom. One of the customs. Of course, still a chance to give baskets to the poor. Purim baskets is a custom, and to your Jewish friend, it's a great idea to someone, but especially to the poor and needy. And next coming up after Purim is what holiday? What big holiday on the Jewish calendar? Passover. And I'm excited. We are going to have it April 1st, and I'm excited. We're going to use a different Seder, Haggadah, for our Seder, a different Haggadah than we've ever used before. This, I love this one. It's called the Simply Seder. And I love the way it's laid out. It's very beautiful pictures and just laid out very, very well, easy to follow. And so it's not a Messianic Haggadah, but we're going to put all the Messianic implications, the New Covenant implications in as we do the Seder. We'll give those understandings as well. So that's April 1st, 6 p.m. Mark your calendar. Prices will be announced soon. It's going to be lower than it was last year for sure. And it'll be close to not too far from Kol Odi. It's pretty close to here, I think the West End area. So that's all. Just wanted to mention that. Back to Esther. All right, it's crisis time. Chapter 4. Look at chapter 4. Crisis time in the book of Esther. You know, she first kept her identity secret. She was under spiritual authority under Mordecai, and he followed her instructions. And you know what? there is, my phone is not on. I'm just looking at a note here. I actually turned it on airplane mode. But Esther is perfectly placed, and so are you. You are perfectly placed by God. Did you know that? And she's under God's authority and authority of Mordecai. And so she knows there's a time to pray and a time to speak and a time to keep silent. She keeps silent in chapter 2, verse 10 and 20 about her Jewish identity because he told her to. Don't let them know you're Jewish. Don't let them know. And so she doesn't let them know. And then later it's going to be the time to make it clear, to appeal for her people. Ecclesiastes 3:7 says a time to keep silent and a time to speak. And so now in chapter 4, we come to a crisis. And look at verse 1. You see, when Mordecai learned all that was done, about they're going to destroy, of course, Haman's intervention. They're going to kill the Jewish people. Chapter 3, verse 8, annihilate all the Jews. He tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went to the middle of the city, crying out with a loud and bitter voice. And so, of course, this happens because Mordecai, remember, will not bow, and refuses the law. The kingdom laws differ from those of every other people, the Jewish people's laws, and they don't obey the king's laws. The Jewish people are targeted because of that, chapter 3. And so now there's a great mourning among the Jews in chapter 4, verse 3, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many put on sackcloth and ashes. And so how frightening this was for everyone. It really looked like the end for the Jewish people, and all because of Mordecai's stubbornness and inflexibility. But really, it wasn't that, was it, for Mordecai? It was really his conviction and his character. No compromise. Can you put up that slide, Miranda? I find it. Yeah, there we go. My friend Joe Zucker, we were in Bible college together, did the artwork for that when he was working with Last Days Ministries, Keith Green. But remember that album? Some of you are my generation remember. What an album, Keith Green, amazing. And this was, you know, that's a good picture of what happened, really. No compromise, not going to submit to the king's edict and to be like them. And so Esther, in chapter 4, verse 4, is told by Mordecai, look at her response to their weeping. And when Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told the queen, she's in this incredible position now. She's queen from being a Jewish, beautiful Jewish girl to now elevated to, because of Mordecai's, you know, advice, she gets picked as queen, and she's greatly distressed. She sent clothes for Mordecai to put on so he would remove his sackcloth, but he refused. She's basically, her attitude is, you know, let's not make a big display here. Let's take it easy. Like the Beatles say, we can work it out, but different meaning there. But she says, we can just do this. And I want to think about this term, providential placement. Providential placement. All right, verses 11 through 14, you see. Look at what happens. Verse 10, it's hard for me to read today for some reason up here. Maybe I don't have it under the right light. But then Esther spoke to Hatach and gave him instructions for Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces fully understand that for anyone, any man or woman who approaches the king, because he tells her to go in and appeal for her people. And she says, well, I can't do that because if anyone does that, they'll be put to death unless the king extends his golden scepter, permitting them to live. And I've not been summoned to go to the king for 30 days. So they conveyed her words to Mordecai. So she's basically saying, well, we've got to be reasonable here. And these are excuses and rationalizations. We can fool ourselves, but not God or the wise. But we can understand her reticence, really, her fear. It's frightening, it's dangerous, it's intimidating, and she explains why it's unreasonable and too risky. She says, I could die, and I've not been asked. So Mordecai's response was amazing. It's not the least bit sentimental or sympathetic. He seems very callous here. He's asking her, look what he says, verse 13, Mordecai sent the reply, do not think in your soul that you will escape, verse 13, in the king's household more than all the other Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Who knows, here's that amazing phrase, who knows whether you've attained royal status for such a time as this. Let's say that Hebrew phrase, le'et kazot. Le'et kazot. One more time. Le'et kazot. For such a time as this. This is your opportunity. This is your opportunity. Moses, Mordechai replies to her, and he's asking her to do the almost impossible, to risk her very life. So to give up all her benefits, her assets, shouldn't he have been more understanding, more gentle, and reasoned with her? Wasn't her fear reasonable? Now, Yeshua oftentimes seemed callous as well, sometimes when we read the Gospels. He's not the mild-mannered Clark Kent Jesus or whatever. He was loving, but he was very direct, and he was oftentimes seemed unsympathetic because he really cared about the truth. And so faith in God is not based upon reason. Obedience to God is not, and almost never, is sensible. 1 Corinthians 2:14, a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God for their foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually discerned. So the one who is spiritual, however, discerns all things. And so when we are focused on the mission that God has for us, when we realize really what's at stake, meaning people's eternal destinies, we may at times come across as brash and direct and harsh. Mordechai puts it to Esther like this. He says, "Don't be a fool. That's not cool. Open up, open your eyes and recognize it's time to be wise. It's your call. Don't be small. It's you or someone else." I don't know how I came up with that, but I read it each year. I've had it the last few years. That's what he really is saying to her. Hey, it's your opportunity, but if not, God will use someone else. Why has God put you where you are today? Think about it. Why has God put you where you are? I may think it's for my pleasure when it's ultimately in order to help others. So may I say this morning? Don't get too comfortable with my possessions. You know, there could be floods there, and some here have had floods take away their possessions. Fires, like happened in California so recently, so much. And many places. Tornadoes, hurricanes, could be an earthquake, not in our area, hopefully, but. Or the stock market, if you have wealth in the stock market, and all of a sudden it turns. Or illness. And all of a sudden, huge medical bills can come. And we all have experienced that. Not all, but many have experienced that. And all of a sudden, you thought you had were okay. Don't get too comfortable with people in your life, your family members. Appreciate them now. Don't get too comfortable with people, your close friends. They may not be here tomorrow. So realize that now is your opportunity to appreciate them. Don't be too comfortable with your position in ministry. Letting go of a ministry to another whom God sends is so important so it can grow. But you say, but it's what I do. But I've done it for so long. Listen, God sends people to replace us sometimes so that you can do something even better. And they can do better. And you can grow. This is how we grow. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. When God sends the person, don't cling on to it. Corrie ten Boom had this amazing phrase. She said, I've learned to hold things, something like this, very loosely. So it doesn't hurt so much when God has to pry my fist open. It happens so often. And if we don't let go, we don't grow and the ministry doesn't grow. Where has God placed you? A choice is before you. Will you enjoy it to serve yourself, or will you risk it to serve God's purposes, to serve his people. This is the choice Esther had, and this is the choice you and I have today. Joyce Meyer, Francis loves Joyce Meyer, listens to her a lot, really helps her. And by the way, I didn't know she's 74 years old. I checked. I'm sorry, Joyce, you might not want me to say that. But still going strong for the Lord. Very strong, God is using her. And she said this, she said, have you ever noticed that the men and women we read about in the Bible and consider great were all people who allowed God to interrupt their lives and were willing to make tremendous sacrifices for him? This is what Esther did. She changed. She had an about face. Am I ready to allow God to interrupt me in my life today or tomorrow? What will it cost me? What will it cost me? King David said, love this verse, 2 Samuel 24:24. If you remember nothing else, here's a good one to remember today. I will not offer to the Lord my God that which costs me nothing. I will not offer to the Lord my God that which costs me nothing. And in chapter 4 of Esther 14, he says, le'et kazot, for such a time as this. It means et, the word et, let's say et, means, it's from atat, it means time. It means to set a firm hour. The idea of destiny is here. He says, you've touched the kingdom. You've touched the kingdom, literally, in the Hebrew. You've come. In other words, one of the rabbis, I love this comment I read. This makes sense. He says, it's like he's saying, who knows, Mordechai to Esther, who knows if there'll ever be a time like this again where you're in a position, in her case as queen, to be able to intervene on behalf of your people. So may I say today, there'll never be a time again like this. Where you can pray, maybe. It's wherever you are. You can pray for your children. There'll never be a time like this again where you can show love to that person in your life that you can now. There'll never be a time like this again where you can glorify God in your suffering. It may be in prison. If you're in prison in a foreign land, you know, but I can glorify God. This is my opportunity. This is my opportunity. Where you can be the best worker under duress, maybe. Where you can use your position and abilities to make a difference for your people. 2 Corinthians 3:2, he says, you are our letter written in our hearts, known and read by all men, by everybody. We're known and read. There may never be a time that you have like this today where God can use you to bring someone else to him. And you don't know that you're being used. You don't know that, but you're trusting God in the midst of it. You're loving God in the midst of it. You're praying. You're being willing to be faithful to God in the midst of it and not abandon your post. Your willingness to sacrifice. Your willingness to let go and give it to God and willingness to trust him and make that advanced step. It may be going on the mission field for him. He's given you that opportunity now. While you have it, it's your opportunity. Psalm 31:16 says, my times are in your hand. My times, biyadcha itoti. Biyadcha itoti, rather. In your hand, in your control are my times. Freedom writer Betty Daniels Rosemond, have a picture of her there. She sat at Woolworth's lunch counter, and this was with Rabbi Michael Wolff recently. I saw it and thought I'd save that picture and just mention it. Here's her history. She sat at the Woolworth's lunch counter in New Orleans, in the early 60s, spent much time with Martin Luther King, was in the Congress on racial equality, and she said that CORE had a direct line at that time to call Bobby Kennedy whenever they got in trouble, and that saved lives. She was almost killed once. She emphasized the role God played in her life and in the lives of other freedom riders and challenged young and old to apply Revelation 3:20 in their lives and really commit their lives to the Lord. Remember, I stand at the door and I knock. If any man hear my voice, open the door, I'll come into him, he with me. Great verse. She said, nonviolence worked And she said, there's too much violence today. And whenever she spoke, he said, everybody listens. Listen, there are many Esthers today. I think I have another picture. I don't have comments on them, but is there another one right there? Yeah, look at some of these amazing women. Many Esthers in our history, and there are many Esthers today. Esther had a change of heart at Mordecai's rebuke, verses 15 and 16 of Esther 4. Esther sent this reply. She could have said, no way, too bad, I can't do this. But she had a complete about face. She said to Mordecai, go gather together all the Jews who are in Shushan and fast for me. She was really, God isn't mentioned, but obviously dependent upon God. They're praying. She's saying, I know it can't happen apart from prayer. It depends on the people that are praying. Fast for me. Don't eat or drink night or day. My maids and I will fast the same way. Afterwards, I'll go to the king. And even though it's not according to the law, I haven't been asked. I'm taking a huge risk. And you know what? If I perish, let's say it. If I perish, I perish. Let's say it again. If I perish, I perish. Oh, boy. And Mordecai left and did all Esther commanded him. Now Mordecai's really under her authority, in a sense, because she's under God's authority. She's submitted to his authority through God, and now he's under her authority because she's being directed by the Lord what to do. She's given herself to the Lord from self-preservation to self-sacrifice. From self-preservation to self-sacrifice, from comfort to risk. In the Hebrew there, yeah, it means avad. Let's say the root avad there. Kasher avadti avadti. It literally means to lose valuable possession. What a great word, to lose value. She could translate, what I have lost, I have lost. It could translate, what I've lost, I've lost. Yeshua said, this is such a drastic change, total change. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will what? Yeah, will find it, yeah. And gain is also in there. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world but forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? These are Jesus or Yeshua's words. Matthew 16, 25, 26. Or again, John 12, 24, he says, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it produces much fruit. He who loves his life will lose it. And the one who hates his life in this world will keep it forever. That's a choice, folks. Would I rather save my life and live in the loneliness and emptiness of self? Or would I rather find my life and live in the fruitfulness and fullness of God? What a difference. And I close with this. Philippians 3 says it this way. I love this, what Paul says. Philippians 3:7. But whatever things were gained to me, these I have considered as loss for the sake of the Messiah. More than that, I consider all things to be loss in comparison. All things to be loss in comparison to the surpassing value of the knowledge of Messiah, Yeshua, my Lord. And by the way, you could read all before that earlier, all that he had, what an incredible pedigree and history and all he's willing, doesn't count it. He says, I count because of him, I've suffered the loss of all things, and I consider them dung, garbage, skubalon, the Greek word, table trash, worse than that, really, in order that I might gain Messiah and be found in him, not having my righteousness derived from the Torah, but one that is through trusting in Messiah, the righteousness from God based on trust. My aim is to know him, my goal, know him, and the power of his resurrection, the fellowship of his sufferings, coming like him in his death. To gain Messiah. How much better, folks, to gain Yeshua, to gain him, right? To gain Messiah. To know him in a measure others do not know him. Hosea 6:3, let us know, let us strive to know Adonai. Like the dawn, his going forth is certain. He will come to us like the rain, like the latter rain, watering the earth. That's another favorite verse of mine, Hosea 6, verse 3. I hope you'll think about, jot it down, that I may know him. let us know, let us press on to know the Lord, to know him. That's what it's all about. Billy Graham was asked again in an interview toward the end of his life. I think it was a different one than that, but it was one, and they said, it was closer to his end, like a couple of years ago, said, what would you change if you could change anything in your life? In your 90s, what is there anything you would change? And he smiled and he said, I'd study more, I'd pray more, I'd tell the Lord how much I love him more. I'd say no to a lot of the engagements. I traveled so much. So many said I would travel less and spend more time getting to know God.